Welcome into Super Bracket Bros. This is Jay, as always, your host and your personal bracketologist. Sitting beside me, I have Eli here today. How you doing today, Eli?
I feel like rushing in.
You went with the most basic one you could.
That's almost like I wasn't thinking about it until we started recording. Like,
how very Magnus-like.
I also may or may not have discovered my family's lineage, and it's a little awkward.
Okay.
Oh, you did.
No, I did. That went right over my head. But welcome back to Super Bracket Bros. We are so pleased to have you with us once again. This, of course, is the podcast in which we have taken 32 fictional characters, brought them in a grand tournament to face each other in a series of one-on-one matchups to see just who is the best of the best. And today, we have brought you a match from one of the earlier brackets. So we're headed back to the first bracket we started with, which is the East bracket, and we're going to be finishing that one up with the 4 and the 5 seed. We wanted to hold off because we have a Star Wars character involved. We have Rey as the 5 seed from the Star Wars universe, and of course recently appeared in Rise of Skywalker, along with someone that probably most people are going to be less aware of.
A little bit.
I imagine most characters are count as less popular than Star Wars characters, though. So we have Magnus Burnsides from the Adventure Zone podcast. So just a quick explanation of what that is, because I don't think I have to explain what Star Wars is to anybody.
But wait, I don't know.
You don't know?
I don't know. What is a Star of Wars?
Well, a Star Wars was a good movie series 40 years ago.
I thought we'd done all our dumping in the last episode.
No, absolutely not.
Give Disney a break.
Yeah, Disney needs all the breaks. We have Magnus from the Adventure Zone. The Adventure Zone is a podcast in which the McElroy brothers, who have about a dozen other podcasts as well.
The most popular being My Brother and Me.
Yeah, absolutely. That's what started it. So if you want to get like a little taste of who they are, that's a good place to start. And then the Adventure Zone Balance Arc was a Dungeons & Dragons podcast that they did, in which they played Dungeons & Dragons and really turned in from a joke into really a grand adventure that spanned over the course of about 3 years.
And even like, it's a podcast, but it's also spawned like graphic novels, it spawned events, live shows,
it's a board game now.
Yeah. So it's one of those things you probably haven't heard of, but when you hear about it, you get enveloped in it.
Yeah, there's a very, it seems to be, I won't say cult following, but like the people that follow the McElroy seem to follow them pretty wholeheartedly, and I think you count us among that group, which is why we wanted to include Magnus. But so, yeah, let's talk about these characters, then where this fight is at, and let's get into it. But so I think this is a good segue into exactly who Magnus is in the saga that is the Adventure Zone. So Magnus Burnsides is a character voiced by Travis McElroy, and was created by Travis as well. If you're at all familiar with Dungeons & Dragons, you'll know he is a human fighter. He's got a lot of different tools at his disposal. He's got several different weapons that he can use at any given time. And so he's a very versatile fighter. He has an axe called Rail Splitter. He has a Phantom Fist. He has a weapon called a Chance Lance. And, of course, you can't forget the Flaming, Raging, Poisoning Sword of Doom. Yeah, you heard me right.
And it's also worth noting that they completed their campaign, so Magnus is a high-level D&D character.
Yeah, he is. I don't remember the exact number, but yeah, by the end of their 69 episode arcs, you know, their characters have leveled up quite a bit and can do quite a bit in the short amount of time that is a turn in a Dungeons & Dragons game. And I mean, really, he's cultivated a very specific role in his party, that he's a heavy hitter and he can take heavy hits as well.
Yeah, he's very much the physical. His two other party members are spellcasters, so he pretty much takes the lion's share of hitting and getting hit.
Yeah, he does take quite a bit of damage throughout the series.
It's also important to note, at one point Magnus did, in D&D, you can multi-class into different classes and get some of their abilities, and so he multi-classed into Rogue. So in addition to being someone who hits hard and can get hit, he's also sneaky.
Yeah, he does. That's certainly a lower level, but it is part of who he is.
He also is not a sneaky personality. He's very loud.
Yes.
He's very brash.
Yeah. There's anything to say about Magnus, I mean, the intro joke was Magnus rushes in. That's literally his catchphrase. So, I mean, he's not afraid of any situation.
He is a meathead, but his main thing is he loves protecting people. He's an altruistic, just wants to do right and protect people, even though it puts himself in dangerous situations.
Yeah, he's a very goody-good boy.
He's one of the goodest boys.
The goodest boys,
even though he hits lots of people.
Yeah. So that kind of sums up Magnus. Let's switch over to Rey. Of course, Rey is played by Daisy Ridley in the most recent Star Wars trilogy, having first appeared in The Force Awakens in 2015, and most recently in The Rise of Skywalker, which came out this year, 2019. Also worthwhile, same as last episode, we're going to be talking about Rey and things that happen in Rise of Skywalker. Just putting it out there, doing my fair spoiler warning.
Yeah, it's going to be very clear spoilers here.
Yeah.
We kind of skirted it around a bit in Kylo, well, but...
I don't think... And we're getting into it, so just so you're aware. But, I mean, Kylo doesn't... honestly, after The Rise of Skywalker, I came out thinking less of Kylo's powers, but vastly more of Rey's powers. Because, in Rise of Skywalker, you find out that... she is the granddaughter to Emperor Palpatine. And so the new Star Wars rules, bloodlines mean everything. So she's a very powerful force user. She uses just a single lightsaber. So nothing too noteworthy there. But she's got a lot of raw strength at her disposal. And you see in Rise of Skywalker that she's trained quite a bit. And so there's more control in the latest movie. But yeah, so I don't know if you have anything else to say about Rey.
Well, not as Rey specifically, but I think this fight is going to be interesting in comparison to last week, where Toph was such a defensive fighter. Magnus is a very aggressive fighter. And so I'm interested in seeing the Jedi tactics, how a Jedi is going to respond to an aggressive fighter.
Because, I mean, you have Magnus. I mean, he's a sword fighter, you know, and you think about him going against, like, other Jedi that have had significantly more training in swordsmanship. You know, you talk, like, if this was a fight against, like, an Obi-Wan or an Anakin Skywalker, like, they trained and grew up in the Jedi system and trained to fight Sith. But on the other hand, you have Rey, who hasn't really... the only experience she's had is against Kylo Ren. Granted, she did have the staff before the movie started, but you're talking about lightsabers and flaming, raging, poisoning sort of swords of doom. Wow.
Okay, so... this weapon was made by a little boy and submitted into the show.
So one of the best parts of the show is that all the items in the show were listener created. And so it was always a joke item in the show that they could never acquire the flaming, poisoning, raging sword of doom. I said it. Fucking give me $100. was created essentially to taunt the characters, but by the end of the show they actually end up acquiring it and Magnus is the user of it, so it's extremely overpowered.
It's incredibly overpowered and borderline unfair.
Yeah, and so with all of these assets that Magnus has, that's why we gave him the 4 seed. And if it's fairly obvious, but Rey got the 5 seed because we didn't know where she was going to go in Rise of Skywalker, and we found out. And so she might have been a higher seed here, but this is the situation we find ourselves in, and let's get into it, shall we?
Absolutely. Magnus is the higher seed. The Adventure Zone is a D&D campaign that spanned several years, so there are many, many locations creatively that we can pick from.
We can bounce between a desert town to, you know, just a small fantasy town versus a big bustling city. But we thought that the home base of Magnus and his friends, the moon base, would be a good place to start, where the Bureau of Balance calls its home, would be a good place for this battle to start off.
Yeah, the moon base is essentially several dome structures. It's very fantastical with mix of science fiction. It's very beautiful, almost like a college campus,
where every single building is a dome. Yeah.
Yeah. And so you know, Rey's gonna be in space again.
Yeah, I know. We thought about this, like, it'd be a really cool place for a fight, but then also, I mean, Rey's gonna feel pretty at home here as well.
So yeah, they're gonna fight on the moon base. How do they meet? Is Rey disrupting balance? The balance of things?
Do we want this to start, are you thinking maybe in, like, the debriefing room, or do you think this starts outside on the actual moon surface?
We haven't really had a fight that's been indoors.
Yeah.
I kind of want to have it in the meeting room.
Kind of where the diocese is, where the director sits, that's kind of where I'm thinking. It's described as kind of a big open space with a throne in the middle of it. So yeah, that sounds pretty interesting.
So now this will be interesting moving forward, because we do a lot of speculation on the types of attacks that characters can use.
Mm-hmm.
Magnus, since he's a D&D character, we literally know everything he can do.
Right, we have the titles and the descriptions of exactly what he can do. They range from parrying moves to like a goading attack. As Magnus's catchphrase implies, he's going to go straight for the strike on Rey.
But okay, what do they say to each other first? And I think Magnus usually says, "Hail and well met, friend," when yeah. he meets someone new.
That's very true. Yeah, he'll open up with a nice friendly greeting and then say something to the effect of, "Sorry, I have to dispatch you today."
"I'm going to kick your ass."
And Rey, has she ever faced anybody as cartoonishly humorous as Magnus?
I think she'll, like, be happy to see the introduction, and then after he says, "I need to kick your ass," she'll be like, "What?"
Oh.
And Magnus, you know, he is a fighter. He's not, like, super speedy, but he is very quick.
Yeah, that's one thing that we should kind of get out of the way right away, is that Magnus, in the podcast, can complete several different actions within the same turn, and these turns don't last very long at all. And so, I mean, he can get several slashes in at a very rapid pace. And Travis McElroy knows what a lightsaber is. Magnus Burnside does not. And so I don't think he pulls out the big guns quite yet, but I think he goes up with Rail Splitter. I think that's fair to say.
And usually when he has his Rail Splitter, which is an axe, he usually has the shield by his side. And this shield is called the Shield of Heroic Memories. And mm-hmm. it basically gives him a boost to his defense. So
he does have a shield. The special effect of the shield is that it allows him to gain extra defense if he's facing an opponent he's faced before, which certainly isn't the case here.
Yeah, but it's still a dope shield.
Yeah, it is. I don't think Rail Splitter is long for this world.
I'm trying to think of a way that...
Yeah, I mean, there's just really no way around it, I think.
It's difficult because Rail Splitter is iconic for the Adventure Zone. It's one of the first weapons that Magnus gets, and it stays with him throughout the whole adventure, and mm-hmm. it's, you know, Mr. Dependable for most of it. But yeah, I don't think it'll do well against the lightsaber.
I don't think so either.
Well, okay, is it so Magnus takes his shot, he runs straight at Rey.
Yeah,
do you think Rey blocks it with the lightsaber, or does she just force push him out of the way first?
I mean, she doesn't really use the force all that much unless she has to. I mean, even if you go back to Force Awakens, I mean, she almost preferred using a blaster. And then, I mean, upon discovering she had the Force, she only used it to grab the lightsaber. And then in the subsequent movies, in particular, you think about Rise of Skywalker, where she tried to pull the transport ship down. She ended up blowing it up. She just displayed a lack of control when it came to saving somebody. And so I guess what I'm trying to say is I don't think she would use the Force to try to block at all during this fight, unless it gets to a dire point for her.
So Rail Splitter comes down, Rey blocks it, and Rail Splitter's head just comes off. It
just comes right off.
Oh, no!
Magnus kind of looks up from this and is pretty shocked himself.
Well, so another tool at his disposal is Phantom Fist.
Mm-hmm.
And this is basically a glove that when you punch somebody, you can send them away.
Mm-hmm.
And Magnus, as a D&D character, a fighter especially, he has all these bonus actions he can take. So mm-hmm. I think Rail Splitter gets cut and he's just like, "Oh, I don't like that." And I think he does another attack to punch Rey.
I mean, he probably loses his balance. He expects to hit something, and then he probably does a dodge roll and then comes around with the Phantom Fist to try to hit her in the back. And I imagine this probably catches her by surprise. I mean, she's going to take a hit here.
All right, we got to roll. We got to roll to see if Magnus hits.
Oh, God.
What's Daisy Ridley's armor class?
Yeah.
But like I said, Phantom Fist, if he punches somebody, he can basically send, like, launch them, essentially. So mm-hmm. with this, Rey gets, you know, launched.
Yeah, yeah, Rey probably gets tossed across the throne room. She gets up pretty quickly, you know, she's not down for the count by any means. And so I imagine this is where Magnus is going to pull out flaming, poisoning, raging Sword of Doom. Yeah, I think I got that right that time.
It's like, time to pull out the big guns. It's also important to note that the sword is two-handed, so he cannot use a shield with it.
Yeah, so let's talk about this sword for a second. How does the most powerful sword in their universe handle a lightsaber?
I like to think that the lightsaber won't cut the sword.
Mm-hmm.
Just for MacGuffin's sake. I don't really have a logical reason for it.
Well, I've been thinking about this, so you don't have to, Eli.
Oh, awesome. Why'd you ask me the fucking question? Because making me look like an idiot.
I want you to fucking contribute, Eli. God, how are we going to get all that ad money if you don't pick up the slack? Anyways.
This is why we're doing the Adventure Zone. We want some of that clout.
Yeah, exactly. We got to get some of that podcast clout. Anyways, because you're right. It's a magical sword and like one of, if not the most powerful. There's two examples I'm thinking of. One is, I want to ask the question, I can't believe I'm about to say this is a more straightforward example, but how would a lightsaber fare against a magical item like Mjolnir?
Ooh, I have to think that because Mjolnir was only broken by Hela, who is a goddess.
Yeah.
And we've mentioned, you know, the lightsabers do have Jedi qualities to it, but it's just a powered rock.
Right. At the end of the day, a lightsaber, no matter whose lightsaber it is exactly the same power. You know, it's just a matter of using different technique. Whether you're a dual wielder, it's a double-sided lightsaber.
So I definitely think that Mjolnir wouldn't be affected by the lightsaber. I think it would, like, block it and things.
That's my thought as well, is I think it would be able to hold up against Mjolnir. I don't think it would, by any means, cut it in half.
And conversely, I don't think Mjolnir would, like, break a lightsaber, if that makes sense. Like, break the beam.
No, yeah, I don't think so either. I honestly don't know if we've ever seen that happen.
That would be nuts.
So yeah, I'm on the same page with you there. I think, like, Mjolnir against a lightsaber, I think that they would counter each other. I think if they held contact for long enough, a lightsaber would start to melt Mjolnir, but it would take a significant amount. And then, like, the other example that I wanted to bring up, just for sake of bringing up examples, is the Phantom Menace. There's a moment where Qui-Gon Jinn shoves his lightsaber into some blast doors, and he inserts it into the blast door, and it starts melting the blast door around it. He's not able to take it and put it through multiple layers of metal and just instantly vaporize it.
Right.
Lightsaber is considered a pretty holy weapon, but at the end of the day, it's not invincible.
Right.
And so I imagine, similar to Mjolnir, it would not melt the Sword of Doom.
I'm fine with that then.
Yeah, I could see it with sustained contact. So if they're in at some point in their battle, if they're locked together, like, then I think Magnus has to be careful, or else he's going to start seeing the lightsaber start making progress if Rey's putting pressure on him.
Conversely, I mean, we're talking about how powerful a lightsaber is. The flaming, poisoning, raging Sword of Doom can burn and poison her, in addition to cut her. Mm-hmm. So this almost feels like a battle of whoever gets the first cut in is going to do some major damage.
Yeah, I think so too. I think that's a major point to bring up here, is like, I don't think Magnus has any sort of, I mean, armor is really a forgotten thing in the Adventure Zone, and I think that kind of comes back to haunt Magnus here in this case, where, I mean, that lightsaber is gonna go right through armor he has, and so I could see where they're kind of going back and forth, they're parrying between each other with the Sword of Doom and the lightsaber.
So if they are parrying, I do need to bring up one of the maneuvers. He has a move called Disarming Attack,
mm-hmm.
where the attack is literally getting the opponent to drop their weapon.
Yeah, I mean, I could see him disarming Rey, but Rey for the first time probably uses her force. I mean, she's able to zap that lightsaber right back into her hand. You know, if you're talking D&D terms, it's almost just like an automatic action.
Yeah.
Like
I always love that after Magnus is found, she's like, ah, take that. And then she just zips it back. He's like, hey, that's not fair.
Yeah. You have to roll for that.
And so this might be a chance for Magnus to pull out another weapon, maybe the Chance Lance.
Yeah, and so I think seeing Rey's force powers probably gives Magnus a little bit of pause that he's not just dealing with a straight-up warrior here, but someone that is capable of magic and fighting directly. I think that's an important note here. And so I can imagine him kind of backing off for a second, bringing out the Chance Lance. And what the Chance Lance is a spear that he can throw and then recall at any time.
Yeah.
And so I think we could see him going with that at this point too, you know, if he wants to kind of get away from the lightsaber, if it's getting a little too toasty for him. You know, I can't imagine holding the Flaming Sword of Doom plus a lightsaber right up against you. It's not the most comfortable place to be for a human warrior.
And don't take it in as like Magnus is getting scared or anything. He fights opponents that are much scarier than Rey.
Yeah.
But he has shown some tactfulness.
Mm-hmm.
And so him doing the ranged isn't like him being backed in a corner. It's like, here, let's try this, see if this works.
Yeah. Do you see the Chance Lance working on Rey at all? I mean, does she bust out some more force powers here? What happens?
First of all, the Chance Lance was made by a goddess, so I don't think the lightsaber can cut that, just to like make it clear.
Yeah.
I can see, I don't know, Kylo stops a blaster beam in midair, but Rey doesn't really stop things in midair, does she?
No, that's kind of the other reason why before Rise of Skywalker, I leaned towards Kylo as a higher seed because he could freeze people with the Force. It's not really something you ever see Rey do.
But we're definitely sure as soon as Magnus throws the lance, I don't think it hits Rey on the first time.
No.
But this is where Magnus is all cocky, like, check this out. It's like, oh no, I missed. Ha, psych.
Yeah. No, he's going to look at her and be like, ha, I can do that too.
Okay, so in the battle, they've kind of, they're spaced a bit. Magnus threw the Chance Lance. Rey dodged it. Mm-hmm. Where are they at right now?
They've gone against each other, lightsaber versus sword here a little bit. I mean, Rey used the Force to force push Magnus to throw him up against the throne or throw him up against a wall nearby to be able to do some damage to him. I think that's a worthwhile strategy. So if she pushes him, I mean, there's not really anything I feel like Magnus can do to stop her from using her Force powers. And so I think that's kind of the crux of this for Magnus is, how does he get around her using the Force?
See, I'm trying to emulate because Travis McElroy plays Magnus,
mm-hmm.
and Travis plays very loose with Magnus. Magnus as a character doesn't really give a shit if he dies or not.
Right.
Yeah. And his play reflects that, where he just jumps in.
Mm-hmm.
And so after he gets Force pushed into the throne, I feel like that's, Magnus is so, you know, tough, but that's got to give him pause of like, I have to rethink this.
Yeah. I mean, what is his strategy to stop getting pushed? Because I mean, normally he has spellcasters next to him, and I think this is kind of the weakness of Magnus, is he's not a one-on-one fighter, he's a member of a party.
Yeah, no, that's very clear, and the reason he wins is because of his allies.
Yeah,
particularly Taco.
Yeah, particularly Taco. Yeah, I mean, does he just keep running at Rey to try to eventually like wear her out? Because I mean, using the Force for Rey is taxing.
Okay, how about this as a tactic? Magnus throws the Chance Lance as a distraction.
Yeah, because he can repeatedly recall the Chance Lance back to him, he's able to continue using it. So
I could see him like bum rush Rey and just heave the Chance Lance, and Rey's attention is on the Chance Lance. And this is where he might bring out his rogue skills, where he has stealth attacks.
Yeah.
I think he like uses that as an opening where her attention's diverted to go in and maybe go for a poisoning raging sword strike.
Yeah, I could see that, because I mean, he is extremely fast, as we've mentioned, being able to, I could see him throwing that chance lance and then going after. And so let's say he gets in a hit here. How does she handle a hit from the sword?
Well, the sword mechanically has plus 20 melee damage, which in D&D is a lot.
Yeah, that is a lot.
And like we said, I think the burn damage and the poison, like the initial strike is going to hurt Rey a lot, mm-hmm. but man, that poison fire, that's going to be lingering damage.
Yeah, that's kind of what I'm thinking is, I mean, if we're trying to think about both these characters in each other's terms and trying to think about Magnus and Star Wars terms, but then also think about Rey in D&D terms. And I mean, Rey isn't a slouch. I mean, like, she's going to have some health to her, you know, some health points to her as well. I could see, like, I mean, she's going to take a decent amount of damage as well. Yeah, but you're right. I mean, it's flaming and poisoning, so could very well, I mean, at some point she's gonna get hit, and so I could see her getting poisoned here. That's gonna slow her down as well as cause some burning damage, and so I think that's pretty significant. And so yeah, now that Magnus has gotten a decent strike in and Rey, I think, as always, let's break our momentum and go to halftime, shall we?
That's why the people listen.
Welcome to our halftime show. Today we have a matchup once again brought to you by a listener. We have Sargeras from World of Warcraft versus Galactus from the Marvel Comics universe. Thank you to @WorldStrongestBaker on Instagram for the matchup today, and let's get into it.
They're basically gods.
Yeah, essentially they are gods that can not only, you know, control a planet, but are destroyers of planets. And so we have Galactus, who literally eats planets to stay alive, with Sargeras, who, upon Googling him, I've seen many Google images of him plunging a sword deep into a planet and it blowing up into hundreds of pieces.
Yeah, you know, I think it's difficult to gauge how well these two fight against one another. Let's put him in a planet-destroying competition.
A planet-destroying competition?
Like a galactic carnival.
So this is like who would destroy the most planets in 60 seconds?
Sure, let's do that. And you just hear carnival music start playing. Can we have this curator be like the most, like, a stereotypical, like, carny?
Yeah,
like,
absolutely.
Like, step right up here. Think you can kill the most planets?
Yeah, we have a planet size carny.
No, it's a normal size carny.
So we have a normal size carny directing these two giants towards a row of unsuspecting planets.
for a really big fuzzy dog.
Yeah.
A stuffed dog. A regular sized stuffed dog.
Yeah. Okay. It's really big to the carny, though.
Oh, yeah.
Like, the carny can barely hold it, yeah. but these two giants barely register it.
But they want it.
They want it. They have this task set out in front of them. Now, upon hitting go, I feel like Sargeras, he has a pretty distinct advantage with the sword. I mean, he can just hack and slash right through these planets.
Well, it's almost like, think of watermelons.
Okay.
And it's a competition between a guy with a sword and a guy who's eating the watermelons. The guy with the sword is destroying the melons faster. I think I just reached my peak on this show.
That is the greatest jump of logic that the show has ever encountered.
I don't want to shortchange Galactus, but if we're using the watermelon analogy, the logic is pretty locked up.
Don't want this to be a gimme, but but Galactus is a hungry boy.
Oh, yeah. I can imagine. Yeah, I've seen some videos of people eating watermelons, like, way too fast.
Yeah. I mean, Galactus, if he's hungry, he can, you know, just swallow him whole Pac-Man style.
Yeah, just like waka 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 through the universe.
Just waka 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 right through this planet-eating competition.
I like to imagine that Sargeras is all cocky. You know, he's just sliced up like two plants. Like, that guy's eating. He's not going to be like, what the hell? And you just see,
We're going to do this democratically. Think about how many planets Sargeras would destroy and how many planets Galactus would eat.
How long did we give him?
60 seconds.
60 seconds?
Yeah. We're going to figure out real quickly if we are even close to the same scale here.
You know what? I'm going to give Sargeras 14 planets, and I'm going to give Galactus 17.
The number I have written down here before he said that I had Galactus 14, I had Sargeras 20, because I think he can do a planet per a second and a half. Right to the soul, boom, done. Galactus, he's going to be taking his time. He's going to be digesting.
Yeah, I think, you know, the thing with eating competitions is an attrition.
It is, yeah. And I mean, Galactus can eat his fair share of planets.
Yeah, he's like the Joey Chestnut of
the Marvel universe. What, I said 20 and 15?
Yeah, I agree with you.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think
Sargeras wins.
I don't think this needs much more deliberation.
That's it. Sargeras wins. He's the greatest, and honestly,
planet smasher.
Yeah, looking at these two, I'm pretty sure he'd beat up Galactus too anyway, so there
the,
you go.
And then the little carny is like, well done, young lad, here's your toy.
That about does it for that. Just wanted to take this moment to thank at World's Strongest Baker for the suggestion. Sorry it's absolutely not what you intended, but you know, there it is. That's that's Super Bracket Bros for you. Just wanted to thank you for listening. Mention to follow us on the social medias. We're on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter. Facebook is a great way to stay up to date and as well as keep track of all the fighters in the tournament with the links. We have the brackets up on Bracket Making website, but it's really impossible to look up unless you have the link. So all the links are on Facebook. So highly, highly recommend that. This week, I just want to say, we do exist on Apple Podcasts as well. If you want to give us 5 stars on there, if you like the podcast, please do. That would be much appreciated. Helps us get the word out about the podcast, because you sure as hell know we're not putting any money into this to advertise. So if you could do that for us, that would be fantastic. But if you don't want to, if you don't like the podcast, email me at superbracketbros@gmail.com and tell us why. I think that's one thing I wanted to mention here, is that us in the early days of doing this, you have a chance to shape how we do this podcast. Like, I don't think you, if you were a listener of this, I don't think you understand how much power you have over us.
Yeah, we're very easily swayed.
So tell us what you think. And I mean, we can make changes accordingly.
And like, we're making this weird amalgamation of different universes fighting one another. So like, if you want to provide some like, oh, this might happen in this case, then.
Yeah, exactly. And then we'll talk about it and we'll give you a shot on the show. So thank you again for listening, and we'll get back up into the main show.
Sounds good.
And welcome back from that eating, I mean, halftime show. Very much appreciate you suffering that with us. But welcome back. We have Rey in a little bit of a tough spot. She just took a swipe from the flaming, poisoning, raging Sword of Doom and has taken some poisoning damage, has a little bit of a burn. I imagine this is somewhere, like, it's more or less a passing strike, either on her arm or on one of her legs.
I was kind of like a gash, not a super deep gash, but like,
yeah, exactly, that's what I imagine as well, where she has taken some damage, but it's enough to put her in a little bit of a tough spot where she's going to start seeing the effects of that. You know, burning does damage over time as well as poisoning. And so this is where I see Rey. She kind of gets tucked into a corner. I mean, this is where the fuck off force powers come in. So at the end of Rise of Skywalker, Emperor Palpatine uses Force Lightning to take out an entire fleet of starships inexplicably. And then at just moments afterwards, Rey is able to block this lightning, sort of speaking to just how strong, in turn, Rey is. When she really goes all out with the Force, I mean, she could launch Magnus out of the building. And so, I mean, I know Magnus is hardy, but let's say that happens. I mean, she just unleashes and launches Magnus. I mean, what's Magnus's next step here?
And I don't think it's like a constant like pull. I think it's just one big shockwave.
Yeah,
that sends him flying.
Mm-hmm.
And we have seen in the Adventure Zone his agility. He's able to recoup from that. And the item he does possess is the Tarantula Bracelet,
mm-hmm.
which gives him the ability to climb on walls.
Yeah.
And so that might come in handy. I mean, he's going to take damage. He's flying into a fucking wall. Yeah. And I think that leaves like a cartoonish imprint of him.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
But he might use this advantage to start scaling the wall and maybe get the drop on her. Like, he can still throw the chance lance.
Yeah. Yeah. If they get a little bit of separation, they lose track of each other at this point. I wonder who... It's sort of a case of who finds who first. And I think this is kind of where Magnus's home field advantage, because he's familiar with the moon base, he could end up with the tarantula bracelet getting the drop on Rey here.
Right. You know, we've seen in The Last Jedi, Rey, you know, obviously she just had this frenetic, like, force explosion. But mm-hmm. we did see in The Last Jedi, she has shown to, like, collect herself mm-hmm. and start, like, recouping.
Yeah.
And I feel like that, in that zen state of the force, maybe the stealth and agility of Magnus may not even matter.
Yeah, I think so too. And it's just a matter of how much is she slowed down from what's happened to her, you know, as far as getting poisoned and burned.
I just... Poisoning plus burn damage in like every video game I've ever seen is a very big deal.
It is a very big deal.
So yeah. I think every passing second in this fight, Rey is losing stamina, losing health, and losing focus.
Yeah.
So even in that Jedi Zen state,
mm-hmm.
would she be able to activate that given that searing pain in her arm spreading through her body?
I give her some credit to be able to do that, but not entirely too much, because I can't think of a specific example where she demonstrates like a high pain tolerance. I think the discussion at this point is, can Rey incapacitate Magnus before she succumbs to the poison? I think that's the question here, because to be honest, really no matter Rey's state, using the force, she's going to be able to push Magnus away. She's going to be tossing him against walls. She's going to be able to use the lightsaber to block really any attacks that come her way. I guess I don't know if Magnus is going to get another opportunity like he did earlier.
You don't think dropping from the ceiling, maybe throwing a chance lance at her, that might create an opening?
Well, he already did that once where he shot the chance lance, and I almost see a sort of Last Jedi moment where Kylo and Rey are fighting over the lightsaber using the force. Like, I could see the same thing here where
that's cool.
where Magnus tries to recall the chance lance, and then instead Rey tries to pull the chance lance towards her. I don't know if the chance lance survives that. Yeah, I mean, I don't think Rey dual wields the chance lance and a lightsaber, although that'd be pretty fucking cool.
That'd be pretty sick.
Yeah.
But I think the second she lets go of that force on it, Magnus is able to call it back. I just, the thing with this battle that's intriguing me is we haven't talked about Rey going on the offensive. We talked about her pushing Magnus back, but she's not charging him with the lightsaber.
Yeah, I mean, I guess it's just not her, not what we typically expect from her. Up until the last movie where she has a true lightsaber battle with Kylo on the Death Star ruins, that's really the only example I mean that, in addition to the throne room sequence in The Last Jedi. But she was always depicted as inferior to Kylo. I mean, while Kylo was taking on three guards, she was taking on one, and she did lose to Kylo before Leia intervened on the Death Star ruins. And so I just don't see her being a better swordsman than Magnus. I guess that's the problem that I run into in thinking about Rey.
Rey's power jump. It almost sounds like, you know, a last second series ending, like, realization rather than a cumulative thing.
Yeah.
Like, based on what I saw in The Last Jedi, she didn't do, like, she fought the Emperor's guards. But yeah, like you said, it was with Kylo.
Mm-hmm.
She wasn't 1v all of them.
Yeah. Magnus, I mean, we've listed maybe, like, half a dozen things that he has at his disposal. Rey, at the end of the day, has a force and a lightsaber. And that's gets you pretty far in the Star Wars universe, but I guess applying that to other universes. I mean, we saw it with Kylo losing to Toph. Like, it's not necessarily applicable.
And it's not just weapons. He has all of his skills, you know, that are demonstrably proven that he can do.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the thing we're not really addressing so much is the ingenuity of Magnus, and by extension, Travis, his player.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he throws refrigerators at people. He does the most left field batshit insane things.
Mm-hmm.
That just, more than anything, throw the opponent off.
Yeah, I mean, Magnus, knowing what's going on, knowing where he's at, could very well use the environment, like you said, for very unforeseen things to be able to fight Rey.
But conversely, going in last week, it's almost a reverse situation where the Jedi now has the terrain control. Mm-hmm. I think we were taking place in the Bureau of Balance, like throne room. You know, Rey can throw that throne. She could throw chunks of rock after that force pulse that she did.
Yeah.
You know, we're like, yeah, it's the simplest, you know, her tool set is so limited. But, and we mentioned this, it's so difficult including Star Wars characters in these things because the force is such an omnipresent, powerful thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you're right. The force is so unpredictable. And that's almost why, like, it, you know, despite everything, like, just the force might be enough to be able to put Rey over the top here. Because, I mean, could she just force push Magnus off the moon?
Like a dog?
Yes. Exactly. Could she just, like, launch a volley of rocks at him that he can't handle? Like,
okay, so we're speculating a lot. Let's go to the text. What is the most impressive thing she can do with the force? You said she basically interacts with a fleet.
Yeah, essentially. Like, she's equitable to what Emperor Palpatine did. And so, I mean, I believe that she has the power to influence many, many, many miles scale. I'd see it reasonable that, I mean, she could shift buildings on the moon base. She could move large clumps of rocks. She could do any plethora of things with the force to be able to topple Magnus from a distance.
But doing all that has got to wear her out. And she still is poisoned and burning.
Even if it doesn't happen where we say it does towards the beginning of the battle, even if it's more like a mid-late battle, like, that is going to happen. Like, she's going to get a strike on Magnus. And conversely, like, and this is one thing, I certainly think that she does damage to Magnus. But, you know, again, D&D universe, characters don't really slow down the more damage they take. You know, if he gets some lightsaber burns or even loses a hand, you know, I mean, he's going to be able to keep going at near full capacity.
And even when you mentioned toppling a building on Magnus, that's if Magnus has one health point, that's not stopping him.
Right. Yeah. He's going to be able to keep going. And I could see Rey slowing down. So, but her at one health point is when her attack is 1,000%, you know? I think we're kind of talking in circles here.
I'm so, because the thing that made me go against Kylo in the last fight was the absence of the lightsaber. I thought that would have frazzled him where his force wasn't so keen.
Yeah.
But here Rey has her complete package. Mm-hmm. As much as the tricks Magnus throws at her, it's still her bread and butter.
Yeah.
When she's pushed into a corner, it's kind of like the Avatar state where that's where she's at her most powerful.
Mm-hmm.
Conversely, D&D, when you're at one health, you're at your weakest.
Yeah.
So the question is, if Magnus can strike down Rey before, you know, she gets that?
Do you have a out of 10 in mind?
No. Do you?
I think I do. So I'll wait for you to deliberate.
Cut to inside the elevator.
After a little bit of a deliberation, I think
you should see the walls in his room right now. There's red tape everywhere and papers flying. And
I have pictures of Rey and their various Star Wars media. You'd be surprised. I actually just listened to the whole Adventure Zone just to get him prepared.
Just in that break right there.
Yeah, 69 episodes at like hour and a half each.
Yeah. Just to make sure.
You know, we were talking in circles at the end there, and the reason is because the Force is such a generalized, powerful thing. Mm-hmm. In the original movies, the Force was, you know, a sort of mystic thing. It was only in the newer media that it became this, like, super cool superhero kind of thing,
mm-hmm.
Which, you know, is awesome, and it's still applicable to this fight. That superhero shit is for this fight.
Yeah, no kidding.
But I think I'm going to have to go with Magnus. And my main thing is that poisoning and fire damage.
Mm-hmm.
That's going to wear Rey down. She's still a human, even though she's the descendant of this wrinkly lightning hand guy.
Yeah.
For whatever reason. That she's still human.
Mm-hmm.
And I think Magnus is going to be able to outlast her. As much as she gets, like, cuts him, you know, with, like, scars and whatever, sends him into a wall, topples buildings on him, Magnus is still going to keep rising, and Rey is going to keep, like, getting lower and lower.
Mm-hmm.
And I think she lets out a strong force attack in the middle of her fight,
mm-hmm.
and I think she's spent at the end. So I give it to Magnus 6 out of 10 times. I'm not more confident just because of the power of the force. That's mm-hmm. the only thing keeping me back.
I am also going with Magnus. I'm even a little more confident than you. I was going to go 7 out of 10 times. For all the reasons that you said, but also at the end of the day, I think, I mean, we appreciate Magnus for his many different abilities, and that's certainly part of it, but also that he is an expert at all those things, that he is extraordinarily well-trained, and that's just something that Rey isn't. Despite the training that she undergoes between Last Jedi and Rise of Skywalker, and maybe this is me not giving it enough credit to Leia's training of her, but I guess I just, it seems to more be like Jedi and Sith lessons and moral lessons that she's received rather than like a specific training. I give it to Magnus because I think over time he's going to get more hits in just from a swordsmanship standpoint. And yeah, Rey's gonna have a big fuck off force push at some point where she does a ton of damage to him, but I mean, she can get pretty spent pretty quick.
Yeah, I don't think Magnus has a direct answer for the force other than his thick head. But that's a very thick head.
Yeah, and I think, you know, like you said, like we've seen Magnus do so many different creative things, and maybe this is just a product of each franchise where, you know, Star Wars, they do pretty much exactly what you'd expect, and maybe that's our distaste for it at the moment. You know, nobody really knows Magnus, so you're probably gonna call us homers here, but
but it's a whole D&D campaign of him fighting monsters of giant worms the size of mountains.
Yeah,
he's shown to fight so many opponents, both of the monster variety and of the human variety, and just the ingenuity. You know, we've been favoring characters in this tournament that can do a lot of things. And Rey, we just keep saying, oh, she, you know, she can dodge, she can force push.
Yeah,
and we're just talking about Magnus's cavalcade of things he can do, and I think that's the difference.
He's the higher seed. I think he's the superior fighter here, even though I mean I still put Rey as like a 3 seed with the immense power she has with the force. You know, I just think Magnus is a really tough matchup for her. But yeah, so Magnus moves on.
Maybe if Rey faced the more streamlined opponent, like maybe a Mr. Incredible without so many tools, I could even see
her faring better against Toph too, you know, better than Kylo Ren did, because I mean if she loses the lightsaber, her force is generally perceived as a higher scale than Kylo Ren. You know, she could still use that to shatter any earth that Toph summons, so I could see her even doing better in that circumstance too.
I'm just imagining Kylo Ren fighting Magnus.
Oh, God. But do you know who Magnus goes up against next week?
Not off the top of my head, Bracket Master. I should know this for my job, shouldn't I?
He goes up against Sora from Kingdom Hearts.
The Battle of the Good Boys.
The good, good boys, yeah. So that's going to be round 2. So that's, you know, yet a couple weeks away. But if you're looking for more Kingdom Hearts talk, you've got it coming.
So now we only have 4 first round matchups, correct?
Yeah, we only have 4 first round matchups left. We have the remainder of the South bracket, and next week we will be jumping in with the 1 seed of the South, Wonder Woman, versus the 8 seed, Mario.
It's-a-me!
These two very compatible fighters going up against each other in what is sure to be an entertaining matchup, if nothing else. So, just wanted to give one final thanks to you for listening. We truly, truly do appreciate it. Got anything else for the people, Eli?
No.
On behalf of myself and Eli here, thank you for listening, and remember, no true hero is a one-trick pony.